Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Football Fanalytics podcast in association with 23. This is the show that explores the ever-growing world of football analytics and takes on the many tactical and topical discussions within the game. It's episode 71 and we're talking about stats in the media today. My name is Ryan Bailey and joining me is Mark Carey, once again in the same room. He hasn't moved away after last time's reveal that he's now moved to my town. He's still here, which is good. How are you doing, Mark?
Good, thank you. I have gone home since. It made it sound...
Sat in my living room the whole time.
He's quite literally not gone away since. No, I've been home. I've been good. It's cold in England, but otherwise I'm okay. I actually went to an under-21s game yesterday, Arsenal against PSV, which was very fun.
Very fun.
Blisteringly cold. So I'm looking forward to watching some football live when it's a little bit more enjoyable.
Does it get to that point when you go to the game and you get to about 60 minutes or so and you're like, yeah, this is cold now?
It was, yeah, it was distractingly cold,
yeah,
I'd say. But a really good game, actually. PSV won 7-2 against Arsenal under 21s in the International Cup.
Wow.
And they were just a class above. And I actually want to put it on record. There's someone called Matthias Tielemans in the middle for PSV. And if he ends up being a well-established Dutch player, then you heard it here first, because he was fantastic. Number six, captain of the youth side. Really, really good player.
If he ends up being a worldwide phenomenon, you saw him on a cold, frosty night in Boreham Wood.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's
correct. Exciting.
And it's on record.
That is on record, yeah. You heard it here first, Fanalytics listeners. Question for you, Mark. I'm going to take you back to September 2022. Picture this. You are watching Roy Keane on Super Sunday shout, "Oh, but he'll score you 25 goals in a season. Strikers are meant to score." That's not an Irish accent, but you get the gist. Obviously, I'm going somewhere with this, but at the time, that was, say, a comment on the idea of Cristiano Ronaldo not necessarily been beneficial to Manchester United as a team, but the idea that a striker is meant to score goals, etc., etc. I just thought to start this week's episode, we should have a bit of a topical one. And after last weekend's fixtures, there was a lot of chat about a new big striker up top, Erling Haaland, one of the potential greatest of all times, if you know, think of it that way. Very bright future ahead, but at the start of the season, everyone was going, "Oh, Haaland's going to rip every single record there is and throw it on the floor." Mm. But now everyone's saying that he's not necessarily very good for Man City. What's the crack, Mark? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, from a tactical perspective, that's not that it's above my pay grade, but it's something which I'm not too clued up on in comparison to other people. Some people are really good at looking at the nuance between the, you know, the rotation of Man City, where it used to be a front four. Where you get a false nine, you get people in the half spaces, you get the wide players, and Manchester City were so good at eluding the press defensively. They were obviously really, really strong as well, and it feels like adding a strong attacker has made them weaker in defence. It's not necessarily made them score more as a collective, but all of the individual records for Erling Haaland are still there to be broken, because the amount of goals he scored. He's on to score, I think, about 40 goals, maybe more this season. But yeah, Manchester City aren't doing better off the back of it, and I don't know necessarily why that is. He doesn't necessarily look to get involved in the play. I think that's fair to say. He never has. I'm looking at his numbers now. So his 24.3 touches per 90 minutes is actually in the bottom 10% of all centre forwards in the Premier League this season. Which, when you think of how possessionally dominant Manchester City are as well, still being in the bottom 10% is even more telling. But then obviously you look at his his goal scoring, and he's got 1.2 non-penalty goals per 90 as well.
Yeah.
So it's one at the expense of another. There isn't a single way to perform as a forward. You don't have to necessarily get loads of touches on the ball, but it shows just how little he's getting involved in the play in comparison to Manchester City last season. And it's one at the expense of the other.
It's such an interesting one, isn't it? Because it's one of the most commonly used phrases by any kind of, I'm going to say, BBC Match of the Day 2 style pundit, your Dion Dublins, your Danny Murphys, etc, etc. Your strikers need to score goals. Striker's job is to score goals, etc, etc. Do you think there's any more phrase that's more triggering for a tactically kind of enlightened individual than a striker's there to score goals?
Yeah, it feels almost like a pundit version of clickbait. Because
I like that.
Do you know what I mean? There's so much more to team style nowadays. Like, you have to be able to have a good defensive structure. Obviously, that goes without saying. But often they'll ask the centre forwards and the forward line to be key to triggering the press, that sort of thing. And I don't think Erling Haaland, actually, to go back to it, is poor defensively. He does put a shift in, I do think. But yeah, it's too black and white thinking to think that all you need to do is just allow your striker to score the goals. There has to be more to it now. Maybe partly in the modern game, but it's always been the case that you've got 11 players on the pitch and you need them to each fulfil a job in and out of possession, but in the all-round play as well. So I do think that, it's frustrating to watch those pundits say that.
There used to be a lad, you'll remember, he was called Sam Wright at our school. And he was a friend of ours. We're talking many moons ago now, because it was a long time ago that we were at school. But I always distinctly remember thinking, and I doubt he listens to this podcast, Sam Wright, if you are listening to this, I'm sorry, I'm about to tell you what I thought of your football in year 11. He was so rapidly quick, and he was so powerful. And basically, when we played 11 aside, he used to get put up front all the time, because he barely touched the ball the whole game. But people just used to lump it up top, and he basically used to run onto it and blast it like at 500 mile an hour back of the net. And I genuinely used to think, you're not very good at football, but you're just insanely effective at being a number nine, running on something and being faster than everyone else. And I'm not suggesting he's anything like Erling Haaland, because I think he lives in Western Supermare now, so I don't, very different to playing for City. But yeah, it just made me think of that, weirdly, because he's such a direct animal, isn't he, Erling Haaland? But, touches and all that sort of stuff. Do you think of him as having a deft touch and all those? He's not the most dynamic, is he?
No, I think his first touch could improve in general kind of play. I think, his link play in general could improve. But are you looking at his numbers again? Like, his carries is really low down in terms of centre forwards in the Premier League. He's not necessarily one to dribble, to take on his man. So I think every time he gets it, he does just kind of bounce it off, give it to someone else, and then sprints as fast as he can to get back into position. So he's not someone who's going to drift into other areas, pull out wide and make space for other people. You know what you're going to get, and maybe that's why, not necessarily that Manchester City have been figured out, but they are more vulnerable, I think, than they used to be, because they are starting to become more predictable, because you know what Erling Haaland's going to do, whereas in seasons gone by, you don't know really what Pep Guardiola's going to do, what any player's going to do, because they can rotate so much. You know that Erling Haaland is not going to rotate. He's going to stay in that central area of the pitch.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, one of the reflection is that I keep saying Erling Haaland. I don't know which one it is.
I don't know, mate. I don't know. You could say Jamie Vardy. That's easier. He's another one who comes to mind when speaking about, someone who you feel like a Jamie Vardy a few years ago when he was in his heyday of scoring all the goals. Can't remember him being too involved in stuff. You just think, oh, Jamie Vardy's running onto it, Jamie Vardy scores.
Yeah, this is the thing. There's more than one way to be a centre forward. It's more just in the context of Manchester City, of how they were last season. And this debate will rumble on. And if they don't win the title, I'm sure it will be forensically examined even more than it has been already. But there's certainly more than one way to be a centre forward. And Erling Haaland is a very, very, very good centre forward. It's just maybe slightly at the expense of the team, and maybe his stylistic fit isn't actually as suited to Manchester City as maybe another team who's willing to maybe play to his strengths a little bit more, play a bit more transitionally, and Manchester City simply aren't that. Erling Haaland's played or come from a team which is far more kind of vertical, more transitional in Borussia Dortmund, where they would get the ball to him a lot quicker, and he's having to adapt to a new style, and they're going to have to adapt to him.
Penny, for your thoughts before we move on with the episode, but given the charges that have been brought against Manchester City this week, which is not really our wheelhouse to start discussing financial fair play, but I do like the image of you going to Boreham Wood on a freezing February night watching Erling Haaland play in non-league if Man City get relegated that far. Can you imagine the damage that would be done? Erling Haaland playing against League 2 opposition, or non-league opposition even. Can you imagine the carnage and the brutality?
It's mad that it's even a conversation topic. Like, we know that Manchester City have spent a lot of money, etc. As you say, we're not going to get into that ourselves. It is mad. I mean, with my Liverpool hat on, which is rarely off, to be perfectly honest, people ask about, I'd be interested to get your thoughts on this. Would you want to get the titles by default? So I think Liverpool, if Manchester City were stripped of their titles, Liverpool, I think, would get 3 Premier League titles by default, right?
Surely not.
And I think Manchester United would get 3 as well. I think that was what it would be. How would you feel about, we know that you don't support a team, but like, how would you feel about getting a title retrospectively and by default?
Oh, it's a hard one, isn't it?
I wouldn't.
It'd be the same feeling as have you ever played pool and it's a black ball game and you win when the white ball and the black ball go in at the same time from the other person, because it's a hollow victory. But I have won in that manner before. I have enjoyed it. So maybe I would. I don't know. Good question. Listeners, if you are in a similar position and you've got your Liverpool hat on and you're a Liverpool fan.
Or
a Manchester United fan. Or who knows, any other fan. I don't think there was anyone else, is there?
Well, sorry, just on that point, is that where does it stop? Because then if Manchester City don't, if they almost were to be stripped of the title and in theory no longer in the league for that season, then what about a team who finished fifth? Does that mean that they get into fourth and they retrospectively get a Champions League spot? Like, and then relegation, etc.
And then people that Man City have knocked out in the Champions League, well, we would have got to the semi-final. Yeah, I'm not sure it's ever going to be there. But if there's an asterisk next to the 3 Liverpool titles, I'm not sure that benefits anyone, really, does it? Even though there is an asterisk next to the COVID title, isn't there?
No.
We won't get into that. Right. Anyway, let's get on with it. Okay, listeners, this is something of a thought experiment this week, I guess. Those who've been listening to the Football Fanalytics podcast will remember that some time ago we did an episode that was based on the idea of a football analytics debate. There's obviously those who are very inclined to want to consume stats, facts, different ways of thinking about the game. There are those who would like to watch the game and tell you who is a good player, who's not a good player, etc., etc. It's much more advanced than that. But we kind of concluded in that episode that you should be able to consume your football how you want, but you shouldn't sort of, you know, criticise the other way. I guess we're going to kind of touch on something similar than that, Mark, right? But in this instance, we're going to talk about specifically kind of the football media and TV side of things, which it's been interesting recently to see more and more stats and facts creep into the everyday mainstream, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we'll come on to the specifics. I'm already thinking that some of the stuff that's used isn't helping itself all that much, in that some of it is kind of using advanced data, which is important, but I don't think it's necessarily fed to the viewer in the best way possible. And this is speaking as someone who obviously likes to consume their football with data alongside it. And I understand what those metrics are. But if our parents maybe were watching it, they wouldn't necessarily understand it instantly because it's not necessarily that easy to grasp. But I think the principle is really important, that it's being slowly drip fed into broadcast coverage. I think there's maybe a wider debate as to how well they are doing it in terms of the explainers that go alongside the data that's fed through.
Yeah.
Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, it does. And actually, I've often thought when I've been watching sometimes, do you think that all pundits or TV presenters who are the ones who are, you know, sort of presenting these stats to us on TV, do you think they necessarily always understand the, you know, the kind of how to use data, what the significance is, context is key, etc.? I'm going to say I don't think they all listen to the Football Analytics podcast as much as I would like to believe that they do. Hello, Lee Dixon, if you're listening. But I mean, obviously, you know, you kind of your Monday Night Footballs, Jamie Carragher, Gary Neville seem to be the ones who are at the top end of the understanding of what we're discussing, aren't they? But do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I think that, yeah, Jamie Carragher, Gary Neville and Dave Jones does a really good job on Monday Night Football of explaining it. And when he says a metric, he does expand upon what that means, which I think is obviously really important. I think as much as they understand it, they buy into it, which is the key thing. And then they start to themselves drip feed it in, and it's just that they are far more accepting of it. And I think that certain things, and again we'll come on to it, things like live win probability in certain games that come on in broadcast coverage does sometimes get a quip from the commentator, and the co-commentator is like, what a load of nonsense or something along those lines, obviously. Yeah. And it does undermine actually what is being sort of fed into it, which again I think it's a responsibility, a duty of care from the broadcaster working with the commentators, anyone who pundits, anyone who covers it, to have that buy-in and to have that singing from the same hymn sheet, if that makes sense.
I mean, win probability is not one I've seen too often, but I'm sure it is there. But I mean, on the surface, even someone like myself can probably say that sounds a bit silly, doesn't it? Because, well, A, if you're 5-0, if one team is 5-0 up, obviously there's a win probability they're going to win. That's not insight, is it? And also, I guess if it's on the base level, if there's always the chance, isn't there, that someone can go score, you know, you're basically just putting the score into a percentage. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's obviously a chance that if it's 2-1, someone could get a chance down the other end and score. But are you just kind of just trying to spoon feed people that the score is swayed one way? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, this is the thing. I don't think that it's explained all that well as to how that win probability comes to be. So, for example, I mean, I'll cut to the chase. The Premier League essentially signed a deal with Oracle Cloud, which is a software company, which delivers football analytics and what they've called match insights powered by Oracle Cloud. So, the Premier League have got this deal, and they do things like live win probability. And essentially what that is driven by data. And what they've said is that it's using 4 years of match data. It shows the chance that a team will win or draw by simulating the remainder of that match 100,000 times. And it's like what we've done before in the Monte Carlo model. It's a statistical model, and it's using things like the input being the strength of the team, the expected goals within that game, as well as the actual scoreline, to say, okay, well, how are things going to change?
Yeah.
And it's driven by deep insight. But if you look at it on the surface and you have no context to go with it, and you, as you say, you see a team that's 2-1 up, you think, well, they've got to have a stronger win probability than the other one. But it's obviously driven by data. And this is, I guess, the debate for today is, as the viewer, do we... If you're going to do it properly. And should it be something that all sort of consumers of the certain game, the certain league, the certain broadcast, should it be something that they opt into, where if you want to consume your football that way, then you can? Or is it just that something that we should just be all kind of on board with, and slowly but surely we'll all start to accept it more and more and understand it more and more? And I guess our dream, or my dream, as the data person, is that we kind of get our own way, in that it does become more widely accepted.
Yeah. I thought you were going to make a opt pun then, by the way, when you said opt in, which disappointed you didn't go down that road.
It's true.
It's interesting because while I had no contact with you while you were knee deep in the World Cup, I don't know if you, where you were watching it, or did you, just, when you were analysing the World Cup, were you watching it on ITV and BBC like the rest of us, or did you have like a special feed?
I don't get a special data feed, no. I was, stuck on the sofa. That was after my operation for my leg as well, so I was just stuck flicking between the channels with a laptop.
Well, so you were there watching the same feed as me then. So I wonder if you spotted some of the things that I did. I actually wrote down in my notes for this very moment when I thought there might be a chance to use it. I wrote World Cup stats, which is very, very in-depth. But it was quite interesting on a serious point. ITV specifically, because I've wrote down what broadcaster it was, they randomly started putting graphics down in the bottom left corner that I'd never seen before in broadcast. I mean, obviously, so, you know, like we're talking about win percentage, or they'll obviously put, like, you know, touches in opposition box, won't they, on Sky? They'll do all the those kind of data, not necessarily metrics or whatever. But a couple of the ones that I noted down, which I thought were a little bit vague, especially to someone who doesn't understand it. I mean, I'm the non-analytics half of a football analytics podcast, and I still wasn't entirely sure what they were getting at. But things like ball recovery time that came up, which I guess is something similar to PPDA that we've discussed before, or, you know, I guess when you think about it, that's from the time they lose it till they get it back, I guess. But it just struck me as a weirdly worded way to do it. Then there was one that was total receptions between midfield and defensive lines. That's jargon, isn't it, for the average viewer? Mm-hmm. Forced turnovers. Is that tackling? Is that pressing? Is it what? And then possession in contest, which I thought was a strange one, which I didn't really know what that meant.
Possession in contest is basically saying that no one, what share of the time is no team actually in possession? So when the ball is bouncing from one team to another, and so, you know, there's been a long ball, the defender's headed it back, it's somewhere in the air, then two players go up for it, no one's actually in possession. Whereas we typically consume our possession statistics as either one team
until
or the other.
Over.
And I think that possession in contest is a good added layer of context to say that there are occasions, or there's a share of time in each game, that no one really has possession of the ball.
That is a good one.
It is a good one, but I completely agree with your point in that it's not, it's almost like black box metrics where you don't know exactly what it is that's being said, but it's still statistically sound. And I think all of the other ones that you listed are still jargon, and I can, you know, infer what they mean using a lot of the kind of the football data jargon. Yeah. Many people, I'm sure, can. But I remember my dad texted me during one of the games and said, I don't think he said what a load of nonsense, but he said words to the effect of, what does that even mean?
Yeah,
because to me, it kind of makes sense because I work within that sort of industry, if you like. But to the football fans who aren't that bothered, it's a bit off-putting. And I think just to note as well, that was coming from FIFA. So the global coverage that ITV and I think BBC had as well, is that's fed in from FIFA.
Oh, so FIFA put the graphics in then? I would have thought that was the broadcast company who put the actual graphics on screen. I know the camera feeds are FIFA, but is that?
I think, I believe it's fed via FIFA.
Interesting, I didn't know that. Well, because what I was going to say was, it's all well and good having these black box stats and stuff that they put out, but I guess if the buy-in isn't there, like we say, from the commentators, and it's not explained what it means, well, then you're just listening to one thing, looking at something else you don't really understand, then also trying to work out what it is in relation to what you're seeing the teams do with your eyes. It's quite a tricky one if not explained. I mean, I think maybe we just take for granted how much spoon-feeding people do need. Mm. I mean, when you sit down and look at the words, total receptions between midfield and defensive lines, I can then work out what it means when I think about it. But instantly, when it's just given to me, just in terms of that idea of me opting in or out, I didn't really need that at that time. Do you know what I mean? It didn't really help with my understanding of the game. It wasn't really explained. It didn't really, you know, it was a bit of a distraction, to be honest. So I'm not sure, would I opt in for that? I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the point as well. I think this is the tricky thing. I also think it's hard to almost defend the data side. It's hard to really concisely title what you're talking about there. Like it can't be two words, because if it's two words, if it was almost like receptions between the lines, like for people who don't know kind of what you're referring to there, you're like, well, what lines? And that could be between the attacking and midfield lines. So you can't say that. So then you have to say midfield and defensive. Then it becomes a bit of a tongue twister. It doesn't necessarily roll off the tongue. And you think, well, you almost admire the effort to do it, because it is in, it's still insightful. Maybe not in game, I don't know. Maybe post match, I'm not sure. But this is basically the debate. If you're going to do it well, do it properly. But you have to admire the effort to try and do it more and more. But that's what FIFA. I think it's FIFA Plus. We can put the link in the bio. There was a whole host of metrics. Many people will have seen it during the World Cup, which, again, it's statistically sound. It's driven by data. It's very, very insightful. It's got all explainer videos from Arsene Wenger, actually, of showing kind of what the metrics refer to. But yeah, if you're going to do it, I guess do it properly. But we've spoken about live win probability. We've spoken about all of the other things like ball recovery time, all that sort of stuff. But I think one thing which is really insightful from other leagues is kind of doing it more from a tactical perspective, and doing it where it's not necessarily kind of written down and with the numbers, but they're able to show heat maps of a certain player within the game. You're using augmented reality to show where a player is getting their most touches within the game, which I think is really neat and tidy. While it's live, which is, so there's, let me work through some of the different leagues. So for La Liga in obviously Spain, they use a thing called Media Coach, or I suppose if in Spanish, Media Coach. I'm not sure. But
thank you for that insight.
But they say there's a press release here, and it says during the match, viewers can see real-time heat maps that depict how far and where a specific player has run. They can also see visualizations of how often a team has attacked down the right wing, left wing, and through the middle. So things that we can do on the 23 toolbox, for example, they can do that and augment it on the pitch in real time.
So what? Sorry, just for the listeners who might not know this is. So do you mean literally as someone is running, you can see their heat map changing? Throughout, obviously not, you know, a heat map is a general thing over time, but as in as the game is developing, if you were to click on Erling Haaland's heat map, for instance, like we were saying earlier, would that just be on the pitch that you're looking at throughout the game?
Well, I think this is on the behalf of the broadcast, is that they would select it at a certain time, maybe when the ball's gone out or something, when a De Jong, there's an example here basically of Frankie De Jong in La Liga, and again I'll put the link in the bio, but it shows it when he's maybe just had a run or just had the ball. It shows De Jong's over the top, but it's not something that necessarily you can interact with as the user.
I
and
see.
Click on
when they choose,
but
to
it's
show
on behalf
it.
Of La Liga and the broadcast coverage, and they choose to show it, as you say. The final one they do, which is interesting, or one of the other ones, is they say before a corner is taken, the graphic shows the percentage chance that the kick will be played either into the 6-yard box, the wider penalty area, or played short. So they have basically a big circle and an arrow with the share of times that they've put it in that area. I think earlier in that season. So that's it's a really, using augmented reality, a really neat way to show it more visually than kind of data led, if that makes sense, because it's so clear that if an arrow is bigger, it is a higher share of this. So it's, you're almost accidentally understanding what's going on the pitch with a bit of help from data, obviously driven by data, but shown visually, which is the skill of data visualization, to be able to not need loads of numbers, but visually is very appealing.
Well, stuff like that I think is really good, and it depends how you like to, well, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I'm like, I would like to see that.
Exactly.
Because I like it when, you know, when someone takes a penalty and before they do, it shows you where their penalty locations have been for the last however many they've taken. So I quite like the idea that at a corner, it's, yeah, this is the percentages that they stick it in the mixer, for want of a better word. But some people might just be like, I don't need to see that because I don't care. I'll just watch where they put it in, and what will happen will happen.
Yeah.
That's almost is that the beauty of it for someone like your dad, who might be like, I just want to see it. I just want to watch where they put it. And if they, you know, if they attack it or, you know, whatever, that's it,
exactly.
And watching that, football, basically.
Correct. And that feeds into the wider point of this episode, as I keep coming back to, that should it be something that you opt into? Some people might just think, stop putting these visualizations over the top. It's annoying me and it's actually distracting me from what's going on.
From watching the game.
Because sometimes, I mean, you've had it when it maybe the camera pans to either a manager or someone in the stands, and you think, put the game back on. Like there was a chance there, and sometimes they might miss a chance or something. So it can sometimes be distracting where you're watching what the numbers are saying. Oh, they've gone 40% down the left-hand side. And you're thinking, well, I've nearly missed some of the action here because I'm too busy being distracted. But again, that's the question. Is it something which is more distracting, or is it something that is enhancing your understanding of the game?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Do they have a feature where you can, there's like a line that follows the ball? Because that's one of my favourite things, especially in like golf, for instance. You know, you can get like a shot tracker and it tells you the shape of the ball. I think it might get quite annoying after a while, but I would, with like a Kevin De Bruyne pass or something, I would like to see the kind of the trace line of where his, the shape of the ball movement and stuff. I think is fun. And also I really like it when, on analysis, they use a squiggly line to for a mazy run or something, where, like, you know, there was that really famous goal where Son, wasn't there, like, ran through
Burnley.
I can't remember who it might have been. Burnley, very good shout if so, but he ran through all those players. It basically showed the squiggly line of where he'd been. See, stuff like that I find really satisfying.
Well, correct, and this is, I really enjoy watching it on Monday Night Football and Match of the Day, obviously in England, to see that post-match. I don't know whether those things are necessarily used within the game across all the different leagues.
Yeah, they're better sat at the end during analysis, or, you know.
Yeah, to watch it first. I mean, if you did the squiggly lines within the game, there would be a ton of squiggly lines because the ball's moving so fast. But, I mean, from a technological perspective, all of these things are possible, which I think is important to say. It's showing off a little bit here, but I went to Germany fairly recently and went to the VAR center for the Bundesliga. And they basically, I spoke with the technology company who kind of fuel all of this. They fuel all the technology, but they fuel all the data as well to be able to create their own metrics, a bit like the FIFA example that we gave.
Yeah.
Create their own metrics, create their own insight. And the main thing that I sort of asked them is almost like, what is the dream? What's the ceiling that you could ever get to? And they said that there's no limit. Technologically speaking, like all of those things that you said, like, obviously, they are already in post-match analysis, but there's probably no reason why that can't be implemented in real time within the game.
Yeah.
Because of the, you know, artificial intelligence, machine learning, etc., can be used to do that. So there's no reason why it couldn't be.
I wonder if we'll get to a point then with all of this where is it a case of you know, like with the Olympics, you can click the red button and you know, you can go watch some wacky sport on a different channel. Is it the kind of thing where on the remote people need to be able to opt in, like we say, and literally sort of click a button that says, I just want to watch the football. So there's no animations, there's no stats, there's no ever. And then is there a second option where you can have it switched on, basically? Is that what the ideal solution is here?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder which opt it is. Is it opt in or opt out? So basically, is the norm that it does
good.
Have it and you opt out, or is the norm that you don't have it and you opt in? I suspect it's probably the latter, but
but I would say it's better the other way. I think if it's all there, fine. That's like the full shebang.
Mm.
But if you just want to like take the graphics off and watch it as if you're sitting in the stands and you're just watching what's in front of you, I think that's the way it should be, personally.
I mean, obviously, I would agree from a data perspective, but I do think it's an interesting one. I think we're certainly going that way. I don't know what the kind of... It's difficult as well because the public perception more broadly is going to maybe be different from what I think it might be, because I am an advocate for all these things and the people that I speak to are probably or are often advocates for it as well. So it may be something they're still exploring to see whether it is going to have the uptake. Because as I say, it's been implemented, rolled out in Spain in La Liga quite commonly in their broadcast coverage. As I say, we have the Oracle Cloud in the Premier League coverage. It's not necessarily used all that much within Sky Sports and BT Sport in England all that much, but they're starting to include more pop-up things, as you say. But the heat map and stuff, I can't say if I've seen that within the Premier League per se.
No, I don't think so.
But again, certainly possible, very, very easy to do. So I don't know. I'd say that it's going that way, but do I have a skewed perception of what I think more broadcast coverage should look like?
Yeah. And have you... I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because you work in circles where people are probably, you know, more open-minded and more susceptible to this kind of thing. But do you get a sense from the circles that you move in and the kind of the feedback you get on your articles and stuff like that? Do you get a sense that people are being more receptive? I mean, we started this podcast, what, in 2020 now?
Mm.
So a good few years ago. At that time, we sort of chatted about the attitudes might change and that this is a new thing. Whatever. It's been a bit longer now, hasn't it? And like you say, we've got ITV at the World Cup talking about ball recovery times. So are you seeing more and more of it in your day-to-day chats with people?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Some of it is still, I was going to say laughable, still is a little bit daft, like the FIFA example, where it's like, I'm all for, it comes back to the point I made earlier, I'm all for it being used more and more as a, maybe the people I'm speaking to, but I do think it has to be used in the right way. And so does everyone else, because there's even things that I can't really see in real time that make instant sense to me.
Mm.
And there was a funny one recently, actually. It was a tweet from James Horncastle, who works at The Athletic, of course.
Yeah.
But he was sort of taking the mick out of it. But it was something on the Serie A coverage in Italy, and I'm sure people will have seen this, is that it has the average apex height of certain players. Now, tell me what that is off the top of your head.
I mean, I know what apex height is in golf. It's when they hit the ball high and it's how the top high, thing.
Exactly that. So how high? It's
so when players are kicking the ball, when you said it for a second, it was like how tall they are or how high they jump.
Well, I think it's how high they jump.
Get lost.
Yeah. So I'm the same as you.
Why?
So I looked into it, and like, I know it a bit from golf. It's just how high the ball goes when you hit it in golf, right? But the average apex height. Compared the one that James Horncastle did was comparing Lautaro Martinez with Olivier Giroud, and Giroud has got the edge on him, but Martinez sort of had basically 26 touches compared with 11 touches for Giroud, but Horncastle basically said, but Giroud is crushing Lautaro on average apex height, which it is, but it's taking it to the extreme. It's taking it to levels where it's like we need to almost master,
what does that tell you?
Yeah, exactly. Master the idea of a progressive pass first and foremost, and that's something which you can get on board with. It's something that makes sort of sense, and maybe feed that in as well, not just go straight for the jugular of average apex height. They also have average shot speed, and you don't need to necessarily know that.
Who belts it harder, basically.
Yeah, and then it has one touch carries percentage. I'm not instantly sure what that means.
What is in their first touch? How far does the ball come off their foot after the first touch or something? Like,
I'm not entirely sure. And this is the thing where if there's going to be more data and tactical insight used within broadcast coverage, I think, as I say, the broadcasters and the data side have a duty of care to make sure that it is maximized, it is understood, it is used within to the best of its ability, basically. And using average apex height is not one of those examples.
Well, surely average apex height would have made more sense if it was like how, I don't know, about them hoofing the ball. Or
a goal
like,
kick.
Do you know what I mean? But then you just get like a Peter Kay style Avic clearance that was like, that took his apex height right up there. But you know, would it make more sense if it was kind of, I don't know, that's silly.
Isn't it? Exactly.
I had a silly idea. I was about to say a third option on the, you know, our red button style viewing thing. I wonder if there's a way for, if you've got kids or something, that you can turn the ball into an emoji or something like that. I thought that was a ridiculous idea. But then Apex, if they're trying to do the Apex thing, I'd rather see a, you know, like on old games, you used to be able to inflate the size of the ball. It was like a big boulder or something. I'd rather see that than, well, than, by the, than look the Apex of it, height.
The reality is more stupid than all of those imaginary things at this stage. But no, obviously we're taking it to the extreme. But I think, as you say, what does the future look like? I think all of those things could happen. But there's also stuff that's going on right now that we need to... Yeah, do properly first and then kind of move on. And don't go straight for average Apex height. Do you know what I mean?
No, give it a while till the Apex height is important. I'm trying to think of what scenario that would be important, but, you know, let's see, I guess. You start analysing their posture, like, what do you want? Anyway, that was really interesting. I enjoyed that.
Fun episode, right?
Yeah, fun episode. And we would absolutely like to know your thoughts, listeners, on... I guess what your appetite is for the stats. You know, are you ready for these stats on your TV as it's happening? A lot of the, you know, I'd like to think a lot of our listenership probably are pro all of this, but it's interesting to discuss it from both sides, isn't it?
Okay, I think one final thing, sorry, is that it might not necessarily be a yes or no for the appetite because it is so complex. If you did say yes, I would like it, how would you like it?
Yeah.
So I think it's classic me. If you answer with nuance.
Yeah. Oh my God. How do you like your stats? How do you like stat? Anyway, terrible. We've descended into a terrible ending to a good show. So get in touch with us. Let us know your thoughts. You know where to do so. We are fanalytics.pod@gmail.com. We're also on social media. We are at fanalyticspod. Please do get in touch. Have a wonderful weekend of football. And we'll look forward to seeing you next time.
Podcast Network.